Thank you, Dr. Feit. It's a pleasure to be back with you and to see so many familiar faces and some new ones. This week, I thought we would discuss a little bit about some gay race issues, especially given the connection to Parshas Lech Lecha. We all know the Torah refers to HaNefesh Asher Asu B'Charan, the soul that Avram Avinu created in Charan, which Rashi tells us, based on Chazal, is a reference to the people that he converted, so to speak, that he brought under Kanfei Hashchina. If you take a look at source number 11, I apologize for going out of order so soon. There's a Sifrei in Parshas Eschanan, which is partially the basis of the comment of Rashi, comments the Ahasas Hashem Elokech, again, source 11. Ahavu ala brios, that you should make the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted by humanity. Ki Avram Avicha, like Avram your father. Shenemar, the Asanefesh Ashur Asu B'Charan. What does that mean? The soul that they created? How do you create a soul? Valo in this kansim kol baya olam libarath yitush achat. If all of humanity were to get together to try to create a mosquito, and to imbue that mosquito with life, they can't do it. So what does it mean, the people that created? He created, obviously, Avram Avinu didn't actually create people. Elamelamed, Shaya Avram Avinu Megairam, Avram Avinu converted them, Umachnisam Tachas Kanfei Hashchina, and he brought them under the protection, so to speak, of the Shechina of the Divine Presence. So it sounds like Avram Avinu was engaged in some kind of outreach to, so to speak, convert people to his religion, which sounds not just that he was trying to preach monotheism, but a more robust kind of understanding of what the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. So how does this fit in with our notions of gayrus of conversion? Most of us probably, off the cuff, are under the impression, largely correctly so, that we're not a proselytizing religion. We don't go out to try to convert people. Now, the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, says that Avram converted thousands and tens of thousands, alafa mirvavos. We usually think that that's not what we do. We're not, if someone wants to convert, we'll talk to them, but we're not out to proselytize. And much of that is based on a comment that we may be surprised to know is a Medrash Rabin Rus. It's not a Gemara, it's not a Rambam, it's not quoted anywhere in the Pesach Shulchan Aruch. But somehow we all know this Medrash Rabin Rus, even though we may not know that it's the Medrash Rabin Rus. Source number two, the Medrash comments, in the beginning of page two, Shovna binosai lechna, that Rus says to Naomi and Arpa, go back, my daughters, go back home. Rav Shmuel Amar b'shlosha mekomos tziv kan shovna. The term shovna, return, is used three times by Naomi. Keneget shlosha pa'amim shadocha mesager, which corresponds to the three times you're supposed to push away a prospective convert. The mitriach yoser mikam mekablosa. If he's so adamant after those three attempted pushaways, then we would accept him. So I think many of us, if not all of us, are familiar with this notion of pushing away ger three times. Again, it doesn't appear in the Gemara, it doesn't appear in Shulchan Aruch, doesn't appear in the Rambam, barely quoted anywhere in normative halachic sources, but it is this medrash. However, even if we're not going to go with this formalized approach of pushing away three times, there is definitely an indication in the Gemara that we're supposed to dissuade a prospective convert. Take a look at source number three, the Gemara Yevamos Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. That's the main sugya about gerus. Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, ger shaba liskayir bizman azeh, if a prospective convert approaches us nowadays, omrim lo, we say to him, Mara Isa shaba liskayir, what are you doing here? Why are you interested? Iyata yodeya, Yisrael bizman azeh, devuyim, dechufim, dechufim, miturafin, yisurin ban alein. Don't you know that we are a pummeled, a pillaged, a abused nation? It's hard to be a Jew. Im Omer Yodei Ani Ve'eini Kedai, if he says, I'm well aware, and I still want to do it anyway, Mekabelu Noso Miyad, we accept him. Modia Noso Mitzvah, Mitzvah, Kalos, Mitzvah, Mitzvah, Tamuros, we give him a smattering of the hard mitzvahs, of the easy mitzvahs. We tell him there are consequences of being Jewish. Till now, if you eat treif, no consequences. You mechal Shabbos, great. Once you become Jewish, you'll be mechal Shabbos. That's chiyuv skila. You're going to eat chaylev. You're going to eat forbidden fats. That's the chiyuv karis. So there are a lot of consequences of being Jewish. So the Gemara here seems to outline that there's an initial orientation of dechiya, pushing someone away, of trying to dissuade them. What are you getting yourself into? There's anti-Semitism. It's hard to be Jewish. There's so many responsibilities. Not worth it. And why do we have that orientation? What's that based on? So if you read on a little bit later in the Gemara, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the 10th line of this excerpt. The middle of the line, it says, Amar Mar. Okay, 10 lines down in this excerpt, source number 3. The middle of the line, after a period, it says, Amar Mar. Ger Shabbat Liskayer, Omim Lo, Mara'isa Shabbat Liskayer. Someone comes to convert, we tell him, as we just said, why are you interested? What's in it for you? Modiyam osam nixas mitzvah talos nixas mitzvah tamuros. We wait for an answer. He says, Yodei ani veina kedai, that I want to do it anyway. That's what we saw before, right? So we tell him what he's getting into. My taima. So why do we have this orientation to dissuade him and to tell him about what mitzvahs mean? The parish nifrosh. We want to give him the opportunity to back out. The umbra of chalbo. Kushim geirim lisalkis apachas. Geirim are as difficult for the Jewish people as a sapachas, a kind of tsaras. Desiv, vidalva hager alehem, minis bechuah beis Yaakov. Literally, that means they will be added on to the house of Yaakov. But the Gemara takes that lashon of dinis bechu as a hint towards sapachas, a kind of tsaras, that geirim are as difficult for born Jews as tsaras. What does that mean? So here we find a major machlokas rishonim, whether this is actually a positive statement about geirim or a negative statement about geirim. Source number 4. Rashi writes there in the Gemara Yevamos. Source number 4, page 4. Lasha. Yep. Page 5. Ah, okay. Sorry. Okay, I have the original version. Okay, page 5, source 4. Lashon Sapachas. Sha'osin Maseim Harishonim. They hold on to their original activities, original mode of life. The love Demisol Mehem, and the born Jews, so to speak, will learn from them. There'll be a bad example that they're going to be vestiges of their old lifestyle that's going to negatively impact on the rest of their community. Oh, people are going to look at what the Geirim do, and they're going to draw erroneous halakhic conclusions because the Geirim are not sufficiently proficient in the literature and what they're supposed to do, and people will draw wrong conclusions from what they see. Yeah. So the Erevav may fit into that kind of a category of a bad influence for the born Jews. Right? Good. So that's Rashi's comment. This is a negative statement, Kashim gave to Sapachas, because they're going to be a bad influence. They'll be a bad influence in their activities, or people will draw misimpressions about correct halachic practice. If you look at the Rambam Perek Yogibli Surabiyah has a similar approach to Rashi. Now, this approach of Rashi and the Rambam, that it's a negative, may be limited to situations where someone is converting for ulterior motives, that's what the Bach says, or maybe applicable across the board, even under the best of circumstances. Maybe there's a concern that there'll be vestiges of previous lifestyles that will impact on their current observance and on the community. Okay. Tosos, however, takes a very different approach. Source number 5. Tosos quotes Rashi. Rashi elsewhere has a slightly different approach. You look at the last line of this excerpt, the last word on the last full line, the Yesh Mefarshim. Tosfos quotes an additional interpretation. Lefi Shebi Yoser Husru Yisrael Alagerim. That we are enjoined about the way that we treat Gerim, that we have to accord them a lot of respect. The Ein Necholim Lizar Me'onasan. And we can't be careful enough not to in any way afflict them verbally, to say something that might be misinterpreted, to engage in some kind of inappropriate statement that would be a violation of Onas Ager and somehow compromising the status of a ger. So not that there's anything wrong with them, the problem with us, that there's such a high bar that's expected of us in how we treat gerim, avas ager, not to violate Onas Ager, not to say anything that's going to be taken the wrong way by a ger. And the Tosfos Yeshanim there in Yevamos has a different approach, also speaking to the positive nature of gerim, that sometimes gerim are more scrupulous about their observance than born Jews, and that's going to create a tie-in against the rest of us, that these people who just started now, they're so meticulous in their observance, and you have been doing this for your whole life, so you can't hold a candle to them. So that's the sapachas, again, not because there's anything wrong with the gerim, they're great, but some of that's going to create a taina against the rest of us. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Uh-huh. Okay, I would have thought that sapachas means the same thing. It's just that, just like sapachas is a hard thing to have, so this creates difficulty for us, but I like your shot. Yeah, okay, good. Good. Okay. So either way, the Gemara says that our reluctance to initially accept Gerim is because of this sapaka status, be it that there's something negative about the Gerim themselves, or it's something negative about us, that we're going to have a hard time keeping up with them or treating them properly. There is a statement, number 6, that the Beis Yosef quotes from the Snag, say from Mrs. Gedolos, one of the Rishonim that counted the mitzvahs, one of the early mitzvah sarim among the Bavli Tosfos. Vasma kosta tam acher, kedesh lo yomar lo acher mikan, ilu ayisi odeya lo yisi nisgayer. That no one should say that had I known what I know now, I never would have done it in the first place. That people should have buyer's remorse. Whoever's coming to convert should know what they are getting into. Okay. So in addition to this level of dissuading a prospective convert that we spoke about till now, the Rambam introduces another level of discerning that needs to be done by a Beis Din before even the initial conversation with a prospective ger. The Rambam, source number 7, Yisurei Bia Perek Yudalid. Why is it Yisurei Bia? Because the Rambam transitions from Hilcha, the relationship of the Shifcha, which fits into Yisurei Bia, into Geirus. Shifcha and Evet into Geirus, which are related halakos. The Geirus process mirrors the process of having a Shifcha Kananis or an Evet Kanani become Jewish at the end of their period of service. Okay. So the Rambam writes, Ketan Mekable Gere had said, like, I believe this is Halacha Tesvav or Tesayin. Ketan Mekablin Gere had said, how do we accept righteous converts? Kishayavo Echelis Gayer Min Afi. If someone comes to convert from the nations of the world, the Yivdiku Acharav V'lo Yimtzu Ila. And we check after him, and we find there's no ulterior motivation. And then the Rambam says, Omulo, we have this conversation, Marisa Shabbos Lestai, what are you doing here? Why are you interested? So even before that stage, the Rambam introduces a level of investigation, and we want to make sure that someone's not converting for ulterior motivation. It is true, we pass in the Mishnah, Machlokes Tanah, in the Mishnah, Yivamos Kapsalit, that even if someone does convert for ulterior motivation, if at the end of the day, they're going to be living a properly observant lifestyle, the Geirus is still good, at least post facto. But we want to weed out that ulterior motivation from the get-go. That's why the Rambam introduces something not explicit in the Gemara, that you have to do this investigation as step one of the process. Tshuva Beis Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Shmelkis, late 19th century. Beis Yitzchak Chayli Beis Yeredeya Simon Kuf O Salad, source number 8. Beis Yitzchak, through no fault of his own, is the victim of two professors, Professor Segi and Zohar, who wrote a book a number of decades ago at this point, arguing that the Beis Yitzchak was responsible for the requirement of Kabbalah Samitzvahs of having a ger or giyores accept to live an observant lifestyle. So they argue that before the Beis Yitzchak, no one ever required Kabbalah Samitzvahs in all of history, and the Beis Yitzchak introduced it. So he's their villain. Professor Segi Zohar, I forget the name of the book in Hebrew, but there's a certain constituency among the liberal Orthodox world that endorses this approach, that there's no need for Kabbalah Samitzvahs as long as someone pays lip service to Orthodoxy, even if they never accept to keep anything, then that's a good enough geirus, and some of the Beis Yitzchak was the one who innovated this notion of Kabbalah Samitzvahs. That's for a different time, how that's clearly not true. But the Beis Yitzchak, you're right, explaining this Rambam. He named Bavuar, the Mechuyav Livdok Acharav. You have to investigate, look after the motivation. The Amnoda Shekavanath L'Shem Davar. And if you discover that the motivation is ulterior, Eim Ekablin Oso, we don't accept it. Umi Dinakat, Umi Lashon Dinakat Boken Acharav. The Lashon of Rambam is that we check after him. The low knock at Bokino, so it doesn't say we check him, it says we check after him. Mashba de Elisha Loso, you don't just ask him, do you have any other motivations in mind? He'll say no. Then Yomer de Ein Kavanos L'Shem Davarak L'Shem Shemayim Sagi. No, it's not that we don't take him at his word, we don't just ask him and leave it there. Raka Bezdin, Sarach Liv, Dok Akarav. The Bezdin has to do with independent investigation. Hainushi Asimu Einav Tiki Chamakavanos, they have to discern on their own through whatever techniques they have, what his real motivation is. Im Yavinu Shakavanasa Bishvil Dabarakir, if they see he's motivated for some other reason, O Isha, Lashem Ish, or a woman who wants to marry a Jewish man, Ayakablu Osam, they shouldn't accept him. Okay. So these two levels that you see in the Rambam, number one, the Gemara's indication that you have to dissuade him by explaining how hard it is to be Jewish, both in terms of anti-Semitism in terms of the responsibilities of living an observant lifestyle, and the other level the Rambam introduces of trying to discern any ulterior motivation. So this all pushes in the direction that we're probably intuitively familiar with, that you try to dissuade a prospective convert. However, there is another approach, a balance, a counterbalancing perspective, which you see even in the original Medrash Rabbah that we started with. If you could flip back to source number 2 again, the same Medrash that tells us shovna, 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 that you have to try to discourage a prospective convert 3 times, then concludes, Amr of Yitzchak, Bachus lo yalin ger, Pasuk and Eov, don't leave a ger out on the street, Lo'olam yehei adam docha b'smol, Umikare the yamin, supposed to say. That you should always push away with the left hand and bring close with the right hand. At the same time, they were supposed to discourage a prospective ger at the right time when he indicates that he really is sincere. We're supposed to encourage him just as well. And that's what the Bach tells us in source number 9. That's the reason that in our initial conversation, we don't only tell him about mitzvos, chamuros, we don't only tell him about the big ones, the hard ones, we tell him about the easy ones as well. And that's why we don't only tell him about the consequences of violating averos, but we tell him about the reward for keeping mitzvos. Says the Bach in the bold lines here, D'shema kavanos l'shamayim. Maybe the person is indeed sincerely motivated. The im lo hodi uhu kalos is chara mitzvos. And if we're not going to tell them about the easy mitzvos, about the fact that there is tsar, gormin letardo ulahatoso miderech tova lederech ra, we're going to cause that we're going to push him away from the good path to the bad path. Shayare milisgayu is going to be afraid to convert the choshvo shakarvu la'onesh v'rachov v'tsar. He's going to think that it's easy to slip up and it's hard to get rewarded. Shakal mitzvah ha'torah kamurosein, that all the mitzvahs are hard and difficult. V'yesh onesh ba'avram, and there's a punishment for violating them. V'shem ein alei miskar, there's no reward. Alkein modiyin oso gam ken kalos shed v'asos an yizkel l'skar gadol. That's why we tell him about the easy mitzvahs too, and that he has the ability to be rewarded if he keeps mitzvahs properly. So we could have said, okay, so he's not interested, and it's not our responsibility to tell him that there were easy mitzvahs also, and that there's a possibility of reward. But the Baal says, no, that it's a balance. It's a balance reflected in that Medrash Rush. That if someone is sincerely motivated, then we're supposed to encourage him at the appropriate time as well. And this approach is reflected in a Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Tzadikas. The Gemara there tells us that Timna ended up being the Pilegesh of Eliphaz, Esav's son. But the Gemara there indicates that Timna approached the others, approached Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, or at least Avraham Yitzchak. It says she approached the others. She wanted to convert. She wanted to become part of the tribe of the others. And the others pushed her away because they were concerned about ulterior motivation. And the Gemara takes that as a taina against the others. They did the wrong thing. And because they didn't accept her, she ended up becoming the Pilegesh of Eliphaz and the progenitor of Amalek. So you see from that strain in Chazal that it is true there are times to push away. But at the same time, on the other side of the coin, if a person is sincerely motivated, there's an imperative to encourage them and to work with them. Now just parenthetically, source number 10, the Me'iri takes a different approach about mitzvah kalos. Why do we inform the prospective gear about easy mitzvahs as well? The Me'iri says, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down, middle of the line, the Yera Hatam the kalos. Why do we tell them about the easy mitzvahs? Nimesha Ovde Ha'alilim Eilahem Bedarche Dateyem Vavodas Elilayem Mitzvah Yisera. The other nations of the world don't have a system, a code of conduct that governs their every move. They just have the big religious ritual. Ukesha Yishma Mitzvah Yisera Shalanu Vakal Shabahem Yomer Belibo Kame Dikdukin Hei Medaktikim Lilo Tzarech V'yachserbo. That if they see that we have a religion that governs every little action, every moment of the day, how we tie our shoes and everything we do from the time we get up in the morning to the time we go to sleep at night, they're going to think that's too much. That, okay, you tell me Shabbos, Kashrus, the biggies, that's fine. But to be concerned about this, all this minutia of halachic observance, that's too much. That's not something that people who don't grow up with the religion are prepared to attempt. So the Me'iri says that even the mitzvahs kalos, even the easy mitzvahs, so to speak, are an attempt to dissuade them. Okay, but so whether or not we accept the Me'iri, there still is this counterbalancing consideration, as we see from Timna, that if someone appropriately is motivated, sincerely motivated, we're supposed to work with them. The Gemara Yevamos that we started with has a line that when a person is ready to convert, Shihuye mitzvah lo mashina. We don't delay the mitzvah. Do it at the earliest time once everything is in place. So shihuye mitzvah lo mashina, we don't delay the mitzvah, sounds like there's some mitzvah involved in accepting gerim. Is that so? Is there really a mitzvah to accept gerim? It doesn't seem to appear in the taryag mitzvahs of the various monayah mitzvahs. What's this mitzvah to accept gerim? So Rabbi Yochum Fishel Perlow in his commentary on the Sefer Mitzvahs of Hasad Yagon suggests that the source for Kabbalah, Gerim, for accepting Gerim, is the source that we started with. Source number 11, the Sifri, the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. That included in Avas Hashem, included in loving Hashem, is accepting Geirut. So that was the model of Avram Avinu, who out of his love for Hashem went out and accepted Geirut. The Rambam quotes this in his Minyan HaMitzvos, Sefer HaMitzvos, Asei Gimel, and the way he presents it is just like Avram Avinu loved Hashem and demonstrated his love of Hashem by going out and preaching the message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what we're supposed to do as well. If you love someone so much, you want others to know about that person. So you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol, so you want to spread the message to the world. So according to that approach, it could be that Kabbalah Geirim is assumed under Avas Hashem. Then he quotes Zaria Bartoloni, who suggests that maybe it's included in Avas Ager. There's a mitzvah to love Geirim. Well, you can't be a Ger unless you're a Megayer. So if there's a mitzvah to love Geirim, there must be a mitzvah to get someone to that point where he's a Ger that you have to love him. And this seems to be borne out by a comment of the Tosafot HaRosh in Shabbos, Perek Blessed Demila, Kuf Lamed Zayin number day, source number 12. Hamalas Agerim Omer Asher Kedishan V'Mitzvot Sivanu Lamal Es Agerim. So if someone performs a Mila and a Ger, you say a Bracha, Lamal Es Agerim. So implicitly, the Tosafot HaRosh is bothered, what's the Vitzivanu, what's the mitzvah? You say bracha, there's a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? Lama l'sagerim, says the Rosh, ki nitzavinu lehov esagerim, we're commanded to love the gerim, v'yashar lios ger b'lo mila, and you can't be a ger unless you do mila, that's a prerequisite for gerim, so it's all part of one package. So there's a mitzvah of ava sagerim. In order to become a ger, you have to go through the technical process of gerim. So that becomes part of the mitzvah of Avas Hager. Right, so there's no Mila, but there is Tfila. There are the other parts of Tfila and Kabbalah, and this is the other parts of Geirus as well. But what you see from the Rosh is that the fact that there's an institution of a bracha on Mila's Geirin indicates that there must be a mitzvah involved, and he says that it's assumed under the mitzvah of Avas Hager. There's just a curious Mar Makom that wanted to share with you. Source number 13. Ibn Ezra in the Parsha of Hakel. So often in Chumash there is a riboy of the Gericha. Many times the Torah lists all the people that are included in the mitzvah, and includes Gericha Shebis Arecha. Most of the Mefarshim understand that term Gericha usually applies to a Ger Tzedek, a convert. And then you have to figure out why do you need an extra Reboy, why do you need to include a Ger. So like Korm Pesach says Gericha, the Darshan, why you would have had a Havamina that a Ger should be back of a Korm Pesach. Fine. Says Ibn Ezra, the Gericha, who is this Ger that's coming to Hakel? Ula Yis Yahei, maybe he'll become Jewish. So clearly Ibn Ezra is not referring to a Ger Tzedek, a convert, he's referring to a Ger Tosha. He's referring to a non-Jewish citizen of the land of Israel who agrees to abide by the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach and has certain citizenship rights, and we're inviting him to Hakel, that maybe he should be inspired to become Jewish. So that's just a cute Mar Malkum to throw into the mix of certain times where we may be more inclined to proselytize, so to speak. Yeah. Okay. Where were we? What does Geirim mean there? So Geirim there means strangers or foreigners. So Avas Hager, you have to love someone who converts to Judaism because they are strangers, foreigners to our religion, just as because we should be sensitive to being a foreigner in a different environment because of our Egypt experience. So it's not exactly the same, but the commonality is being a foreigner, a stranger, in an alien environment. Okay. So, yeah? No, definitely not. Definitely not. But it's, I mean, we do know that Avram Avinu kiyam kol haTorah kula shelinina. Avram kept the whole Torah. We don't necessarily assume that the other people he brought along with him also kept the whole Torah. That might have been Avram Avinu himself. But the lashon of Machnisa and Tachas Kansei Ashvina sounds like it's more than just believing in monotheism and keeping Shabbat Mitzvah Sinei Noach. Not necessarily. Correct, there's not me. It definitely wasn't a full observance. And it may well not have been anything like our Geirus, but at least there's an excuse to talk about it this week. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the other people clearly fell away. There's no trace of them afterwards. That's a different conversation. We're probably going to try to figure out what happened to them. That's true. Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. Good. Right. Could be. Well, that would be, you have to prove that. Okay. It's the Avram Avinu gets the benefit of the doubt. Okay. So, till now, we've developed the balance between pushing away and drawing close in the Geirus process. Are there situations where the balance is shifted, where maybe there's more of an orientation towards Kirov, more of an orientation towards promotion, and less of an orientation towards Yechiyah? So, part of this conversation begins with literature that was spurned by Rabbi Bernard Eloi. Rabbi Dr. Bernard Eloi had a doctorate in philosophy from the University of Budapest, was probably the first real serious rabbinic Talmud Chacham to have a rabbinate in America. They say that Rabbi Rice of Baltimore was the first rabbi in America 10 years earlier. But Rabbi Eloi left Chuvas, left Sefer that was published by his son. He was probably a fascinating figure in American Jewish history, 1814 to 1875, the Talmud of Chacham Sofer, doctorate from University of Budapest. Not many Talmidim of the Chacham Sofer went that way, as far as I could tell. And somehow he got on the wrong side of the revolutions of 1848, was forced to come to America. He ends up being a rabbi in Baltimore, 1860, and right before the Civil War. He gives such a stark secessionist Russia that they offer him a shtetl in New Orleans in the heart of the South. So 1861, Rabbi Eloi is the rabbi in New Orleans. New Orleans is a major southern town to fall to the north. And then by the time the war is over, he gives a very passionate hesped for Lincoln. But what's fascinating is that Rabbi Eloi left for us literature both in terms of articles written in the Anglo-Jewish press of the time, correspondences with Gedolim in Europe, like with Shamshon of Paul Hirsch, of Israel Hildesheimer, Rabbi Nathan Adler in London, and his son put together a collection of his writings, which was titled, in Hebrew, Sefer Milchamas Elokim, and I guess they told him he has to have a controversial title, so in English they called it The Controversial Letters and the Casuistic Decisions of the late Rabbi Bernard Eloi. Now, I confess that I have to look up in the dictionary what casuistic means. I won't embarrass anyone, but apparently it means, it means a theologian using moral and ethical arguments to solve a problem. Be that as it may. So he was actually responsible, among other things, for the Shaila after the Kashif of the Miskavi duck, which Ada Yom HaZeh, the OU, doesn't certify, but there were other poskim that did certify it to other places and times. He wrote to the Gedolim in Europe that when he got to New Orleans, he saw these funny ducks waddling around, and he didn't know what was going on. They were shacking them. So he wanted to know what the story was. Anyway, so one of the issues that Rabbi Eloi dealt with in his Rabbanus was the phenomenon of intermarriage, And the fact that there were so many intermarried couples where there was a Jewish father and non-Jewish mother, and they wanted to give the kid a bris milah. There was no havamin in the world that they were going to be megayer the kid. No one was interested in any form of observance. But the father was Jewish enough, he wanted to give the kid a milah. So Rabbi Lowy was very firmly against allowing such a practice. He issued an edict in town that the molim were not allowed to do milah under these circumstances. He writes, there are 3 molim in town, 2 listened, 1 didn't. There's a whole taram in the Anglo press. He made it over to Europe as well. And that spurned a back and forth, which is printed in Tshuvas of Israel Hildesheimer, between the Zvi Hirsch Kalischer and of Israel Hildesheimer. Zvi Hirsch Kalischer, the Drisha Sion, one of the early halachic Zionists, and there's Israel Hildesheimer of Germany. So a part of the issues that they dealt with is, how do we treat the child of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother? Is there any Jewishness? We know they're not halachically Jewish, but is there any Jewish spark, anything that would cause us to view this person differently than a regular non-Jew off the street? So part of what they argue about is source number 14, Pasuk in Ezra. Ezra and Nehemiah also dealt with intermarriage in their time. Pasuk says, "Ki nos umi binoseyam lahem v'livnehem." So they married from their daughters and their sons. This arvu zera hakodesh v'ame harbatzos, and holy seed was mixed up with the nations of the land. What is that zera hakodesh? So is it referring, as Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer argued, to the seed of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, that even though that child is not halachically Jewish, there's still an element of Zera Kodesh, there's still something Jewish in them? Or no, Zera Kodesh just refers, in general terms, to these situations where the father was Jewish. He was a Zera Kodesh, but not that the child conceived with the non-Jewish mother is in any way Zera Kodesh. So the Zvi Hirsch Kalischer argued that this Zera Kodesh may be an allowance to give a milah to this child, because the child is a little bit Jewish, even if not fully Jewish. And Rabbi Hildesheimer argued, even though generally we accept the Rabbi Hildesheimer position that we don't give a milah to children under these circumstances if the mother's not Jewish and there's no geiris in the works, but the notion that when it comes to geiris, we may treat the child of a Jewish father differently than someone coming in off the street does have some resonance among Batei Din. So if someone has a Jewish identity, even if they're not halachically Jewish, we may minimize the dechia that we engage in for such a person. And we have this very often. People are raised in an intermarried home. There's a certain resonance of Judaism because the father's Jewish, so they're not halachically Jewish. But at some point, they express an interest in halachic eros. And to some extent, we minimize the dechia that we might otherwise invoke to someone coming in off the street. So there is some resonance of this Zera Kodesh argument. And this is even more pronounced when it comes to situations of gir l'chumra, where someone themselves, a mother, grandmother, had a non-halachic conversion, but a strong Jewish identity, and or maybe a substandard Orthodox conversion, or whatever the details may be. Or sometimes you have someone who's been living a firm lifestyle for decades, only to realize that there's a shayla in yichus that they weren't sensitive to before. But in all these situations, again, everything may be case specific, but there's a clear orientation to minimize the dechia and to facilitate a proper geiris. Ramosha, in source number 15 here, Igros Moshe, this is one of the posthumously printed volumes, Chelek Tes, but it was a tshuva that had been printed, the Chayav, in a journal, and dates back to the 60s. Ramosha was asked by someone in Brazil about a situation of a girl who believed that herself to be Jewish, is now engaged to a Jewish guy, and discovers that that she's not halachically Jewish. Right. There's an issue with her yuchsin. So Moshe writes that under these circumstances, you don't view this as Geirus for ulterior motivations. It's true that the reason she's doing this now is because she's about to get married and just discovered that she's not Jewish. But the real reason is because she believed that she was Jewish her whole life, and now she just discovers that she's not. That she's not halachically Jewish. So there, Moshe says that that's not called the Geirus L'shem Ishus. That's not called Geirus ulterior motivation. That's considered a Geirus L'shem Shamayim, even if it happens to be that the local impetus is that she's about to get married. I just saw in the Sukkos HaModia magazine, they had an interview with Yitzchak Zilberstein, who told the story that when he's involved in many medical halachic shilas. So he was involved in a case where there's an abandoned baby and they had to look for someone to adopt the baby. And there's a shilah whether the baby was halachically Jewish because they came from Russian parents, weren't able to ascertain whether the parents were indeed halachically Jewish. So Rav Zilberstein said that he asked his father, Rav Yashiv, what to do. And Rav Yashiv said, in this situation where there's a suffix, a doubt as to whether someone is halachically Jewish, so there's no dechi, you don't push them away. You do a geirus as soon as feasible. And he quoted as a source a Rashi and a Sfas Emes in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Pehei Amud Aleph, talks about a situation where you have someone of doubtful religion. You don't know whether he's Jewish or not Jewish. So if he's caught under an avalanche on Shabbos, you have to save him. So the Gemara there says, but one nafkamina, you don't know whether the guy's Jewish or not, it's a kid, lachila novelos, so can you feed him non-kosher food? The Rashi comments, achi yigadel, v'kabel of geiris. So you can feed him non-kosher food because he's presumed to be non-Jewish until he grows up and is megayer. It says in Sfas Emes, what do you mean until he grows up and is megayer? Who's to say he should be megayer? As far as we know, he may well not be Jewish. We're supposed to push away Geirim. So what does it sound like from this Rashi? That if there's a suffix, if there's any doubt, even if it's a small doubt as to whether the person is Jewish, the appropriate thing to do is to encourage him to get to the point where Geirim is in order, to get to the point where he's going to live an observant lifestyle and properly be Megayer. Okay, looks like we are out of time. Let me just conclude. Yeah? Yuma Peheim and Aleph. Let me just conclude with source number one, back where we started. So the Medrash Tanchumen, our Parsha, tells us on the second line, Amar Eish Lokish, Chaviv Hu Agerish in Isgayer, Mi Yisrael, Bamidas and Alar Sinai. So a Gerer converts is as dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or dearer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, than the Jews at Mamid Har Sinai. Lama, Lefisha ilule sharau kolos ubrakim vaharim roashim akol shofros loyim akam esatora. That kafalein hargigigas, if not for the sound of light show mamad ar sinai, we never would have accepted the Torah. Vizeshalo ra'echadim. This guy, he wasn't there, never saw any of that. Uba v'hisha masma kash baruchu, he comes and he wants to convert. V'kibol av malchus shamayim, v'yesh l'chachav v'nizah esmemedrish rhetorically, is there anyone as dear to Kadosh Baruch Hu as this scare? So we should all be cognizant that the people who make it through the initial dechiyah, make it through the process to undergo a proper halachic conversion, are people that we should be in awe of, and we should be cognizant of the avas hager that's required of us to properly integrate them into our community. Okay, I don't know if we had a notion of Ger Toshim in the time of Avraham Avinu, but yeah. Eloi, Bernard. Yeah, Google him, you'll find him. He was Hungarian. Yeah. Interesting person.